This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is the Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Now, here is the Glow Show.
Welcome back to the Glow Show. Gabby, welcome.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm healthy.
You're healthy. And we have Jen today in the studio.
Yeah, she looked at me sideways when she said that. Look, I have an ongoing issue with illness at the moment. My son is a little germinator.
Oh,
I'm doing well, though, Will. Good to see you again.
Now, Gabby, today we have a special guest in.
Yeah, Bianca Philibon.
From?
Well, she's from many places. But Bianca's in the studio today because of the launch of a recent pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get Bianca to tell us what the name of the task force is because it's quite long. And I was involved originally. It's around sexual violence in licensed premises. Isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. The task force is being run through the Department of Justice here in Victoria. So it's the Sexual Harassment and Assault in Live Music Venues Task Force.
It's quite a name. Yeah, that sounds very specific, sexual violence in live music venues. What's behind all this? Why did this come about?
So there's a couple of things that led to this task force. So the first was my own research that was done here in Melbourne looking at sexual violence in licensed venues in general, so not just specific to live music venues. So that research found that particularly women and LGBTQ people were quite routinely experiencing different forms of sexual harassment and sexual violence when they were going out to venues. But the other impetus was a number of quite high profile sexual assaults and incidents of sexual harassment that had happened specifically in live music venues. So in particular, one of the other members of the task force, who's a Melbourne-based DJ, had an experience of assault in a Melbourne-based music venue, which she'd gone to the media about. We got put in contact with each other and started lobbying the government to do something about the issue. And here we are now about to launch our pilot.
And it's fantastic initiatives. When I think of sexual violence, and I think a lot of people out there will think of sexual violence. I mean, it would be across a whole spectrum of things. But obviously, music venues has maybe an alcohol component, which is probably where you have the spike in a sexual violent offence happening. Would I surmise that correctly?
Yeah, so I mean, it happens across all types of licensed venues, but I think there was a perceived need for the music industry to take a lead on the issue in the aftermath of those high-profile assaults. It's certainly not something that's limited to music venues, and I mean, our hope in the long term is that the pilot will actually be expanded to include other licensed venues as well. But absolutely, you know, alcohol, drug consumption in these types of venues plays a role here.
Live music venues, obviously quite loud and usually quite crowded. Apart from alcohol and drugs, do you think that adds to why it seems to be perhaps more of an issue in those types of venues?
Oh, absolutely. That use of space and the crowded space in particular was a really key thing that came out of my research. So the fact that you do have all these people who are jammed into quite a tight space. Obviously, you inevitably will kind of touch and bump into each other. It's unavoidable in those spaces. So it does create an opportunity for people to grope someone or touch someone inappropriately, for example.
And get away with it. Yeah, and take advantage so that they think perhaps they can say, well, I didn't actually do anything. It was just crowded and what you're saying happened didn't actually happen.
Exactly. It was just an accident. I bumped into you. Or often, you know,
12 times.
Exactly. or people would turn around and there's 20 people around them and they have no idea who's done it. So it's very, very difficult. One story that I've heard recently, for example, of a woman who was at a music festival, and as her and her friends were walking out through the crowd, she was groped by a man. And once they got to the back of the crowd, she turned to her friends and said, oh, that guy groped me. And they all said, yeah, he did the same thing to me. But none of them had actually seen it happen to each other. So again, that crowded space really obscures what might be going on.
So I suppose part of the pilot that's been launched is about making sure that staff who work in the venues are looking out for behaviours like that, but also taking the matter seriously when people report to them that these things have happened, and then I guess knowing what to do once they're told.
Yeah, that's right. So there's, I guess, a few things that the pilot's aiming to do. So firstly, we've designed a policy for venues to put in place so it's very clear what the expectations are of staff and also of patrons going into those venues. It clearly states what sexual harassment and assault are, because again, people often, I think, think, have a very narrow understanding of what these behaviours are, and that it has to be the most, you know, sort of serious form of sexual violence. Whereas actually what we're saying is it's really anything that makes a person feel uncomfortable and feel that they've been sexually harassed. So it's about the victim or the person on the receiving end of that behaviour and how they interpret the experience that needs to be privileged. So there's also a training package that comes with that that aims to teach venue staff strategies for intervening, strategies for recognizing the behavior when it's taking place, and how to respond appropriately if someone does come forward and say someone's harassing me or they've done something inappropriate or made me feel uncomfortable. So really trying to arm them with some practical skills to know what to do in that situation.
This training package, it's currently being put together or it is complete? And if so, when will this be released to venues around Victoria?
The training package has been designed. So I think by the time this goes to air, the training should have been
made available.
Done, yes, within the pilot venues. There's also an evaluation component. So La Trobe University are going to be evaluating the program to see what impact it has. And then from that point, we're not actually sure at this stage what will happen with the training package. Ideally, we'd like to see it rolled out to all venues across Victoria. But of course, that's a decision for the Department of Justice to make down the line.
What's involved in the training package?
I can tell you a little bit about it. Delivery of the training has been outsourced to an external provider, but in general, it goes through what sexual harassment and assault are and tries to dispel any myths or misperceptions that venue staff might have around sexual harassment and assault, to challenge any victim-blaming attitudes that they might have. It goes through a series of practical scenarios and asks staff or participants to think about how they would actually respond in that situation. And it gives them a series of practical examples and, for example, sentences of things that they can say if someone comes to them with a complaint about something that's happened. Again, so they've got those very practical things that they can take and put into practice in the job.
Bianca, what's some of the complexities with LGBTI licensed music venues? What's some of the barriers and the challenges that people might face in identifying whether sexual violence has occurred or talking to people that have had it occur to them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's such an important question. Firstly, sexual harassment and assault are things that we tend to think of in very heteronormative terms. So the dominant portrayal is really that it's something that a man does to a woman in the context of a heterosexual relationship. So that can really obscure the fact that LGBT people experience sexual harassment and assault in the first place, and that it's something that can occur within LGBT communities as well. So that in and of itself can be a major barrier to people identifying what's happened to them and labeling it as sexual harassment and assault. Feeling able to tell someone else about what's happened, I think it adds another layer of concern. You know, will I be believed? Will people understand what's actually happened to me? If it is disclosed to a member of staff, whether they'll take it seriously or believe it or recognise it as something that constitutes harassment or assault. So those are definitely some complexities. Something that came out of my research on the topic for LGBT participants was that they were often very protective of queer-friendly venue spaces, particularly because they were often the one type of venue they could go to where they didn't have to worry about experiencing homophobic or transphobic abuse or people questioning them about the toilets that they're using, or have to be worried about showing physical affection towards a partner, for example. So because they didn't have those challenges in queer spaces, there was this tendency to really downplay harassment and assault that took place in queer venues because that's their safe space, and there was a need to maintain it in that way and to kind of protect
It's a similar kind of thing in family violence.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I guess that's where the training is really key when it comes to those discussions that people are having with the members of the public that have potentially been through some experience. It's kind of in reverse of what would normally happen, I guess, people trying to get the attention of the police or people at the venue. You need to make sure that people have that sensitivity to be able to explore whether or not something has occurred and make them feel comfortable to have those conversations.
Yep, absolutely, which is a really challenging thing to do in practice and, you know, possibly something that's not going to be achieved until we're further down the line in addressing broader cultural and social issues around homophobia and discrimination.
Yeah. It does clearly extend out of live music venues, out of pubs, but also into sex on premises venues as well, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one interesting thing from my research, so I spoke to a few participants who went to sex on premises venues, and I guess the cutoff line for whether something constituted harassment or assault was different in sex on premises venues. So they were, I guess, willing to tolerate more before something became problematic. So if you're at a pub with your friends and someone groped you, they would probably find that problematic straight away. Whereas at a sex on premises venue where you're there to seek out sex, they would perhaps be more tolerant of that happening. And that was just kind of excused as part of what happens at those venues.
And we do have a podcast about sex on premises venues where we talk about consent, and the fact that you're in a venue like that doesn't mean you have to say yes to everything that's happening around you. So make sure you go and listen to that if you're interested.
Now, that's fascinating. Now, your pilot program that you have, what I've got out of it is that you've got some training packages and some information packages for venues. Will that get extended to the public, and also on the other side of the seesaw, will that get extended to the police force members as well for information and understanding, education on how to handle situation?
We probably don't have a clear answer on that at the moment. Yeah, that will be up to the Department of Justice to decide later down the track. I mean, my understanding is that the materials will become publicly available, that it will probably just be left up to people to take them up as they desire.
Were there going to be posters in venues? I remember talking about this early on. Was that part of the discussion as to what's in the pilot?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a social marketing component to the pilot, which consists of a series of posters and signage to put up in venues. So that's really about communicating to patrons that, hey, the staff in this venue have received training. If someone's making you feel uncomfortable, you can go and talk to any member of staff and they know how to respond and they're going to act appropriately. And that's really aimed at overcoming that barrier to reporting that a lot of people have, that belief that no one's going to care. It was too minor, too trivial, or I won't be taken seriously. I won't be believed. Maybe I'll be blamed because I've been, you know, drinking or whatever.
I remember we were talking about a scenario where you'd got perhaps a transgender or a gay and lesbian person in a venue, and it wasn't an LGBTI venue. And so they were getting harassed because other patrons in that venue were saying, oh, you dirty dyke, or you faggot or something, or you get out of here, why are you dressed like that? So that's an example of what we want people to report to staff and even report to police.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not the groping.
Well, that
it's
not too.
It is, obviously, but I mean, it's also other things like verbal harassment.
Yeah.
It extends in many areas. So we need to be a little clear that sexual violence doesn't happen in a physical sense all the time. It can happen on a verbal sense.
It's a broad range of antisocial behaviour.
Correct, yeah.
And one of the key things that the training tries to get across is that sexual harassment and sexual violence often overlap with homophobic and transphobic violence. Those things can occur at the same time.
And we know that verbal harassment precedes physical assaults on a larger percentage of occasions. So if people are saying things that you're not liking verbally, it's highly likely that they're going to escalate, maybe not with you, but with someone else. So we want those things reported.
I think particularly for transgender women in my study, who would often be verbally harassed by heterosexual or cisgender women in the toilets.
Yeah.
And then those women would go and tell their male friends or their male partners about this person who, you know, in quote marks, shouldn't have been in those toilets.
Mm.
And the men would escalate that to physical violence and physical assault.
Actually, that was going to be one of my next questions, because quite often, particularly for transgender people and gender diverse, you know, the toilet issue can be very problematic. Do you think the training will be able to extend to security in licensed venues as well? Because quite often when people are approached in the toilets, it's usually security. Somebody goes and taps them on the shoulder and says, hey, a guy's walked into the female toilets. I know it's happened to me a number of times and they've been quite forcible. In one case, trying to drag me out of the toilet. So do you think that training will extend to those people as well?
Yeah. So the idea of the training is that everyone who works in the venue receives the training, and that includes the security. Of course, we won't necessarily have control over how that happens in practice, particularly because security are often external
private firms.
Exactly. Yeah. But ideally, every single person in the venue will receive the same training. So everyone's on the same page about what should happen and has the same understanding of what harassment and assault are, what behaviours are unacceptable.
Yeah, great.
Now, if I'm listening to this podcast or it's been shared to me and I'm a venue owner, how can I get some more information about this initiative and this pilot program?
So you'd need to contact the Department of Justice. But at the moment, they're the people who have carriage of the training and the pilot package. So hopefully they can help you out.
And once the pilot's been run and La Trobe University's looked at it and put out a paper or acknowledging the project, where it's worked, where it hasn't worked, we'll have to get back together and do another podcast.
A follow-up and see and analyse some of the statistics and see if we have some positive direction, which I'm certain we shall. And don't forget forget, this is, once again, it's a quite an interesting and unique podcast. So don't forget to share this with your friends. And if you know anyone who's involved in any venues, might be a pertinent one to pass on to as well.
Yeah, because even if you're not involved in the pilot, I think all venue owners and managers should know about this.
Certainly,
and they
aware.
Could take this kind of thing on themselves.
Exactly. Anyway, Bianca, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. It's been fascinating.
And, my pleasure.
Jen, thanks, you. Will. Great seeing you again. And Gabby, and once again, don't forget to download all the podcasts.
Yeah, download and rate them.
See you next time.
See you next time.
See ya.
You've been listening to The Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Head to joy.org.au/The Glow Show to find more episodes or search Joy 94.9 Glow Show on iTunes. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rate and review if you like what you hear.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.